Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hello, Kelly. Guten Morgen.
I'm so happy you're with me today. You are a good person to talk to about this, because what we want to talk about is looking forward a little bit to WWDC this year, and you've attended many.
So, 17.
Yeah. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about what it might look like this year. Now, we're sort of basing this on an article that Jason Snell wrote over at Macworld. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Jason. This was a great article. Awesome.
We really enjoyed it. And part of what I enjoyed about it is that it wasn't just what happens if Apple decides to cancel WWDC in light of current events, the way other large gatherings of people from all over the place have been canceled. South by Southwest is not canceled, but Google I.O. has been canceled. Some major players pulled out of GDC or Game Developers Conference. And I don't follow that as closely, so I'm not sure that that one even is going to continue to happen. NAB happens every year, and they're having some open conversations about that, maybe not this year. And I think Facebook is canceled there.
Yep.
To do every year.
And Microsoft.
Yeah, and Microsoft as well. So it kind of feels like it's more of a when Apple finally pulls the plug. We never hear anything about when it's going to be or anything until the end of March, usually, anyway. So it's not unheard of for people to be like, I don't even know when it is at this point. So, that's pretty common. So
we should preface this by saying that there's two effects here. There's the logistics effects, which we'll talk about, of actually not having people show up in a conventional way at WWDC. And then there's programmatic aspects, how this will, how this disruption may impact the development of Apple products, the timing, and so on.
Yeah. Right? We'll talk about that bit in a minute. But first, like, the thing that we're looking at the most right now is WWDC. And one of the things that Apple makes a big deal about every year is how many people are there and how many countries they represent and how far people came to all be in San Jose at the same time. And the thing about WWDC, like, when people talk about WWDC, they're talking specifically about Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. When you hear people sort of use the colloquialism of WWDC, what they're talking about is being in San Jose, California, during the same week in June that WWDC is happening, because there's also AltConf, which happens right in the hotel that is connected to the San Jose Convention Center where WWDC is held. There's the Layers Design Conference, which also happens in San Jose at the same time. And there's usually at least one or two more that are all going on at once. And so a lot of people, whether or not they are officially attendees of WWDC, actually go hang out in San Jose for a week and meet up with all their friends, meet up with all the other people that they know, make new connections and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot that happens in that week at that time.
That's the source of a lot of angst about this. There's two pieces of it. There's the technical content of WWDC, which is what WWDC is all about.
Yes.
And then there's the fraternizing and the partying and meeting people and having fun and being in San Jose, which when you're deprived of that is sad, but may not have a material impact on WWDC technical side.
Right. Yeah. And so that's part of the concern for a lot of people, I think, is that this doesn't just affect people who have or desire to have or aspire to have or are hoping to have a ticket to the Worldwide Developers Conference. There's a whole lot of other stuff that happens at that same time. So if there's no WWDC, will there be a Layers? Will there be an AltConf? Will there be any of these other things that are also happening at the same time? And that's kind of the question to ask. But really, if we want to just focus on the developers conference itself, the initial keynote, first thing Monday morning, is always live streamed. Like, it hasn't been forever, but it has been for a good number of years. As long as Tim Cook has been the person delivering that keynote, I think, it's been a live streaming event that anyone could go and view and check out if you wanted to on their website. And so there's like the one that happens in the morning that's sort of the public preview of macOS and iOS and whatever else they want to talk to us about. And then there's a developer State of the Union that happens in the afternoon. And then there's all the sessions that go on. So Apple engineers come out and deliver a presentation to a room full of people, and that presentation and its slides, and if there's any additional material, those things are all available on Apple's developer website. And you can get access to those just by having a developer ID, which is free. And you don't have to...
There's an app for your phone that has access to those. It's cool. Yeah. It's called Developer.
Yeah, it's a great resource because you're getting all of this information from the horse's mouth. You know, these are Apple engineers that are coming and telling you this. And so those things have a certain amount of value to people. But the thing that I know a lot of people who go to the people I know who are actually super excited about attending WWDC are happy about the sessions, but they know that whatever they miss in a session, they can get later off the website. What people are really going for is the in-person time, what they call the labs. So there are labs available, and it's just a room. I've been there. I've been a WWDC attendee, and I've been part of some of these labs. And you go in, and you get a chance to sit down with an Apple engineer, and that Apple engineer will have a conversation with you about whatever the thing is. They're all based on certain topics. So if you're having problems with something particular in QuickTime, or you're trying to do something specific with a kernel extension, or there's some bug that you're running up against in the share sheet or whatever it is, like, it doesn't matter. There will be labs available and there will be Apple engineers there. And, you know, maybe you can talk to the person who wrote that piece of the share sheet who can tell you, well, it works like this and that's why you're running into trouble or whatever. And a lot of people who go to the developers conference really value that hands-on in-person time.
I think there are ways to deal with that. I think the Apple engineer could log on to your computer and walk you through some code or compilations or some interface issues. Of course, you could also do a FaceTime session with in parallel with it or in substitute. I think it's possible to use the internet to substitute for that, sitting next to somebody and coughing on them one-on-one.
Well, to be fair, I don't go to San Jose every summer to get coughed on, but I do go to San Jose every summer. Like, I'm sure I get coughed on. You know, we've all talked about, you know, since the last big viral outbreak, it sort of gets colloquially referred to as ConSARS. So you go to a comic convention or you go to developer conference or something like that, and everybody comes home and goes, oh.
CES is famous for that.
Yeah. The CES flu, I remember people warning me about when I went to CES. So, you know, like, that's a thing that kind of happens everywhere. And, you know, this year it just seems like it's entirely possible you could catch way more than something that, you know, you partly picked up from exhaustion because everybody's up too early and out too late at night, you know.
I want to talk about audience reaction to the presentations. Mm-hmm. Jason brings up a really good point, and that is that in addition to the live streaming and having networks and TV cameras there and all that jazz, it's likely that Apple could bring in lots of employees to fill the theater. And there would be the appropriate amount of laughter and applause during the presentation.
Okay, yeah.
And it could be almost like the real thing.
Now, I do want to point out, I think it was Google I.O. last year. It was either last year or the year before that I watched the live stream. And they basically mute the audience. Like, if the audience is having any sort of reaction, like, you don't really hear it. And so it's very odd to watch a presentation that, you know, is being presented to a room full of people and not be able to hear the room full of people react. So if you think that that doesn't seem like a big deal, go watch the Google I/O presentations, because when somebody there,
I've never watched it. That's very weird.
When somebody there, you know, they make a little joke about, like, you know, like, now I don't ever have to, you know, whatever it is, they make some little joke that, you know, in a presentation where people are listening to you, people kind of, you know, you get like that little bit of reaction back, and there's like nothing in those feeds. And I didn't realize how disconcerting it was until I got about 10 minutes into this and went, it sounds like they're not talking to anybody. And it's very clear they're in a giant room and they're just not talking to anybody, and it feels surreal. It's you, like, it took me like 5 of those 10 minutes to be like, I know something's not right and I can't figure it out.
My first blush take on that is that Google is about tech. Mm-hmm. And Apple presentations are about the human interface factor and making your life better.
Oh, sure.
And so there's a warmth to it, and you could expect some cheering, and you wouldn't expect it to hear his, any kind of cynical boos during an Apple keynote.
Right.
So, and you want to have that human effect.
It's just interesting.
Yeah.
So I do like your idea of, and I think Jason mentioned like having FaceTime calls with Apple engineers, if this turns out to be a thing that Apple can't necessarily do, you know, in person, if it turns out that WWDC has to fundamentally change at least this year. The other thing Jason pointed out about DubDub that I thought was kind of interesting is that maybe, things that they put in place this year, they will figure out are pretty awesome and make it so that more people are able to air quote attend.
Yeah.
If they can do some of this more online, because not everybody who doesn't live in the United States but builds an iPhone app can afford to come, even if they were able to get a ticket. Even if they got a scholarship, it's entirely possible they couldn't afford the travel or wouldn't be able to travel for whatever reason, whether it's a viral restriction or whether it's some sort of diplomacy related issue that makes it so that people in that country are not allowed into the United States or whatever it is. Like, there are a lot of reasons why it would be great for somebody to be able to attend who would absolutely benefit from attending who may not be able to because of some barrier or another.
That's a good point, Kelly. It could change the flavor and the nature of these conferences for all time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love the in-person component. I mean, I've done interview after interview. I've talked to Dave about it more than once, probably here on the show. I think we probably talked about it last summer when we were both in San Jose coughing on each other about how important the hallway track is, what it means to be able to bump into people, how those random connections can turn into something else. All that stuff is also really great.
18 minutes to get into the bathroom. Yeah.
Well, maybe for you. Yeah. The one advantage to being in the vast gender minority is that I never wait in line for any bathroom in San Jose. Yeah. Just for the record, your experience there and mine are very different. But the other thing I think we should probably discuss is, since we're already on coronavirus, is what this could mean for Apple on a larger scale. For example, yesterday you had someone on your show, or yesterday you published a background mode where
Monday,
days are hard.
Sasha Segan.
Yeah, you talked with Sasha Segan, who made some predictions.
Yeah, Sasha believes, and he's pretty confident about it, that there's going to be a March 31st, that's a Tuesday, Apple event, in which they're going to announce the iPhone SE 2.
Okay.
New generation iPad Pros with an A13X processor.
Okay.
Typically, the next generation of the A series comes out with the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the X version for the pad with the augmented graphics following.
Yes.
And some new developments in iPad OS he thinks are going to be presented. And okay. I forget whether he said it, but I think some other people have mentioned that there may be, and it may be slipstreamed in, or it may be a mention at the event of the 13-inch MacBook Pro. Apple tends to focus on these events on an iPad and iPhone emphasis, it's unlikely that a single Macintosh product would be announced, but who knows?
Right.
But people are eagerly awaiting what's now called the 14.1-inch MacBook Pro with an Ice Lake processor. Oh, I'm so excited.
Now, I do want to point out, we talked a little bit about hardware yesterday, and part of why I'm curious about this in this particular instance is because I just wonder, on the physical side, we know Apple makes the bulk of this stuff in China. And we know that a whole lot of China is under lockdown for this, for the current coronavirus situation. So how are they going to build this stuff? Like, if they can give me, you know, one thing, we got the new iPad mini, the finally, it only took them, you know, 3 years longer than it should have, iPad mini update in March of last year. And so having another one in March of this year would be great. We got
another
the
iPad
new
mini? No.
No, I'm saying it would be great. And part of why I'm saying that is because if they were to put out the SE2 as a smaller phone and then they released an update to the smaller iPad, that seems like thematically that would tie together nicely. But mostly, how are they going to make sure that they have enough of these things built that they can get them out the door? That's really what I'm looking at is, why would you announce something in March if you can't give it to me?
Well, from what I'm reading, and I know some of it's PR from Tim Cook, but from what I've seen so far, things are winding down a bit. I've seen some articles briefly at USA Today, I think this morning and yesterday, about how factories are predicting they're going to be back to normal by the end of March. In China. Okay. So,
well, and it's also possible. I mean, I don't have any sort of deep insight into the supply chain, so I don't know. Maybe they're already built and they're just waiting to get them out the door. I don't know.
Well, you brought up a good point during the morning meeting too, and that is, why have a March 31st event if there's going to be a disruption and you can't talk about the products or you can't further develop the products in a WWDC environment? Mm-hmm. So maybe they'll just not have an event.
Yeah.
Sasha talked about hoping to be, on his way to Steve Jobs Theater on March 31st. So the question is, if WWDC is going to be canceled, would an event in Steve Jobs Theater announcing new iPad Pros be affected as well?
Right. Or would it just be a thing where maybe they put two extra stations full of hand sanitizer at the door and call it good and let people, you know, if it's just people that are coming into the theater for something and leaving again, you know, who knows? But the other piece of this that we sort of wondered about in the meeting as we were pondering this was if we end up with fundamental changes to DubDub, if we end up with issues of whatever shape they take in the production schedule, then what does that mean for what we normally look forward to in September and October?
Yeah, we were talking in the morning meeting about how this could be a propitious occasion for Apple to take a year break off on macOS, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of griping in the developer community about how macOS updates every year put too much strain on them as developers, keeping up with the technology and modifying their apps. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that all that recently that somebody suggested that, you know, Apple, you know, go back to an 18-month or 2-year hiatus between macOS updates. And so Apple might say, you know, we're going to do a partial rollout of macOS 10.15.6, mm-hmm. which is going to have some exciting and good new stuff, but we're going to delay Apple 10.16 until mm-hmm. the fall of 2021. Yeah. So that might be an excuse or an opportunity or maybe necessity to right. take a break.
And at this point, given the number of moving parts that we're keeping track of on an operating system level, this is before you get to external apps or anything like that, keeping track of all of that stuff, I feel like Apple was really onto something when we used to get the bolt tightening release that I always called it. You know, when we got Sierra and then High Sierra, Leopard and Snow Leopards, you know, when we got those, you know, Lion Mountain Lion, even if you want to go back that far. When we got those, it was maybe there's one or two new things that you want to get the new operating system for, but really what you want it for is that all the stuff they rolled out for us last time all works better now. Like, I remember, I'm not going to remember which version it was when we got AirDrop, but that was how AirDrop was if you could use it, it was great on that version of the operating system. But the next one was the one where it got solid and people could start relying on being able to swap things back and forth reliably. Yeah. And that's what, and I'm looking forward to something. I think it would make most people very, very happy if maybe you got one new feature or two new features that we're trying out.
Continue all the grief that there's been with Catalina and lost emails and security issues.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't be a bad idea for Catalina to sort itself out over a 2-year period instead of one.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd be happy for a .5 or a .6, like you mentioned. I think there's definitely something to that. This is the point where I'm going to tell everyone that we look forward to your letters. you can tell us if you agree or disagree with any of our pontification today by emailing observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. John, thanks so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. We've been talking about Jason Snell's great article at Macworld called "What Happens If and When Apple Cancels WWDC 2020? And we'll put a link in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
Awesome article.
Yes. And again, hi to Jason. And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.